Welcome to the Kickstart Garage, where we want to inspire and educate the leaders of tomorrow. Join us as we learn from the best in the business.
Welcome back to the Kickstart Garage. I'm your host, Sam John Byrne, and I'm accompanied by my co-host, Gavin Quigley. On today's show, we're going to go through the key takeaways of a book that has been pretty influential on my life, and I'm sure Gavin will say the same. The book being How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. The book was originally published way back in 1936, and I have to say it has stood the test of time. I found the principles laid out in this book to be timeless. The first time I stumbled upon this book, it was shortly after reading Rich Dad Poor Dad. Talk about going from one epic to another. It was a great week. The first time I heard about this book was through an interview with Warren Buffett. And in the interview, he was saying in his office in downtown Omaha in Nebraska, he displays only one certificate of his education. And it isn't his bachelor's degree from the University of Nebraska or his master's of science in economics from Columbia Business School. It's for completing the Dale Carnegie course in effective speaking, leadership training, and the art of winning friends and influencing people. And after hearing that, I was wondering, who's Dale Carnegie? And that's when I stumbled upon the book. And I say I've re-listened to it at least once or half a year on Audible. It's a fantastic book. So before we dive into it, Gavin, do you want to give the audience a brief background on Dale Carnegie?
Yeah. My pleasure, Sam. I mean, where do I begin with Dale Carnegie? The man is the GOAT in so many ways. It's ridiculous. How to Win Friends and Influence People is my favorite book of all time. And I read a lot of books. Obviously, with my background being in sales, I see him as like the godfather of negotiation, persuasion, building rapport. But we're only really scratching the surface here. I mean, for those who haven't heard of Dale Carnegie, he's an American writer and lecturer and the developer of courses in self-improvement, salesmanship, corporate training, public speaking, and like interpersonal skills. So he was born years ago in Missouri in the early 1900s. It said that he, you know, he enjoyed speaking in public. He joined the school's debating team and that he had to get up at 3 a.m. to feed the pigs and milk his parents' cows before going to school in the morning. So I suppose that's where it all kind of began for him. Carnegie's first job after college was selling correspondence courses to ranches. So he moved on then eventually to selling things like bacon, soap, lard for Armour and Company. And it was fairly evident that he was going to be going places. You know, he was so successful, he ended up as the national leader for the firm very quickly. He ended up doing, though, oddly enough, he quit sales, wanted to become an actor. He ended up attending the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, which was in New York, where he got into the idea of actually teaching public speaking when he was living at the YMCA. And he persuaded the manager to allow him to instruct a class in return for 80% of the net proceeds. And, you know, in his first session, he didn't plan right. Whatever happened, he ran out of material. So he had to improvise. And when he was improvising, he suggested that the students speak about something that made them angry. And what he discovered was, you know, he discovered that the technique made speakers unafraid to address a public audience. When people have that emotion inside them, the fear goes away, you know. It's like when you speak about something you're passionate about, you don't really care what people think because you know you're right. It's something like that anyway, same kind of idea. So, you know, it's from this that the Dale Carnegie course evolved. Carnegie tapped into the average American's desire to have more self-confidence. And by like 1914, he was earning $500 a week, which is about, you know, almost $13,000 a week these days. So fairly raking it in. Some facts about Carnegie then that most people don't know is that, you know, during World War One, he actually served in the US Army, and he was apparently recognized as being missing one of his index fingers, which I think is a bit mad. He's written some other books as well, just to finish up on his background, I suppose. You know, one's about personal development, public speaking mainly. But it was in that 1936 year where Simon & Schuster published How to Win Friends and Influence People. The book was literally a bestseller from the debut. By the time of his death, you know, the book has sold 5 million copies, 31 different languages. and there had been 450,000 graduates of his Dale Carnegie Institute. So it's insane, absolutely crazy that it's still so well recognized now about 100 years later. But I suppose, Sam, I'll hand it back over to you if you want to take us through the first two sections of the book.
Yeah, sure thing, Gav. I suppose, first of all, the book is broken down into four sections, those being fundamental techniques in handling people, the 6 ways to make people like you, the 12 ways to win people to your way of thinking, and the 9 ways to change people without arousing resentment. The key message of the book, and to quote Dale Carnegie, is the only way on earth to influence other people is to talk about what they want and show them how to get it. Which leads me on to what I believe is a key fundamental principle within the first section of the book, arouse in the other person an eager want. This I've found not only to be a great way of influencing people, but also attracting the right kind of people into your life. You know the old saying, you're the product of the 5 people closest to you. Well, you need to have the qualities to attract the other people that you want to be around. It's not about who you know, it's about who knows you. You only have to look at the talent that Elon Musk recruits for SpaceX. How do you think he recruits the best people to work for him? And why do you think people want to work there anyway? It's easy. They want to be part of a team that are the best of the best on a revolutionary mission to achieve interplanetary travel led by one of the greatest minds in history. It would be incredible to be part of that journey. And Musk is able to arouse in these exceptionally talented people a want for them to work for SpaceX and follow him on this crazy endeavor. And if we're talking about influence, here's a more simplistic example. What do you do if you want to train your dog to give you the paw? It's easy. You find out what they want. So more than likely, it's a dog treat. And then you just, it's trial and error, you know, you put the treat in your hand or whatever, and they try and paw it out. And then you give them the treat at the end if they give you the paw. So, you know, that's how you arouse in someone an eager want. But nobody is going to follow you if they don't want to, you know. You need to create that invested interest. So, and then in the following section, so I'll just jump over now. In the following section, Dale talks about 6 ways to make people like you. From that, I've found these to be the most important principles. Remember that a person's name is to that person the sweetest and most important sound in any language. Now, that's a quote from the book. That's it wouldn't be something I'd be saying. And this is a principle I struggle with big time because of my short-term memory. There's nothing worse when you forget someone's name or you call them the wrong name. There was actually a guy I used to work with in the cinema, and he could never remember anyone's name just because the turnover in the cinema was crazy. It was just so high. And I'd say after a couple of years went by, he just gave up on trying to remember people's names. So he just referred to everyone as man. It didn't matter if you were a woman or a man. If he saw you, you'd be, hey, man. So there's one thing I have noticed is that nobody ever forgets the name of the person that remembers everyone's name. And it's funny, but it does show how important that principle is, that little statement alone. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, the CFO of the company, the ex-CFO of the company that I work for now, never forgot anyone's name. It was incredible. And he wouldn't just remember your name. He'd remember, like, if you were married and you had kids, he'd remember the name of your kids and your spouse. Like, he was on another level. And to this day, I'm still trying to figure out how he did it. And I know there was a rumor I heard before that he kept everyone's name in his contacts on his phone with a little note about them. That he checked before going to meet them. And it's very impressive. Like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he's read this book. And, you know, not forgetting someone's name, it shows you that you care. You're saying, I know who you are. And once they hear it, they'll tune in for what you have to say. So the second principle I found out of this section to be pretty important when getting people to like you is become genuinely interested in other people. Selfishly speaking, this principle is a lot easier to practice if you associate with people you admire and respect, and you know, you'll always be interested in what they have to say. At the end of the day, though, like, regardless of who you're speaking to, it's all mindset. So I think this is a skill that I really picked up on from when we did our first podcast, because unlike the podcast we're shooting now, which is it's somewhat scripted, on the other podcast, we went in with no script, no preparation, no nothing. And in order to produce a podcast that has a great conversation, but with no script, you have to have a genuine interest in the guest and what's going on in their life. Over time, you kind of, and like as time passes, as you're talking to them, you'll get wrapped up in it. You know, you're asking all the questions, you're digging deeper, and you learn loads about the person and how they think and what makes them tick. So having that mindset really helps the conversation, but it's not to be mistaken with, you know, being nosy or inquisitive. That's not what I'm saying at all. It's just the mindset that you want to talk to this person, not that you have to talk to that person, if that makes sense. So, you know, treat the other person as if they're your favorite celebrity. That's probably the best analogy I have for that. So finally, the last principle of the section before I hand you back over to Gav is just be a good listener and encourage others to talk about themselves. So back in secondary school, and I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this on the podcast before, I had an old business teacher, and he'd say, God gave you two ears for listening and one mouth for talking, so you should do twice as much listening as you do talking. Another one of his wild quotes I'll never forget. But it's not a secret. You know, people absolutely love to talk about themselves, and you know, you should listen to what they have to say. Everyone has a story to tell, and encouraging them to talk about themselves is a great way to get to know who they really are. And at the same time, they might be going through something that you're completely unaware of. But the only way, you know, you find the stuff out is by getting them to talk about themselves. So, you know, put your interests on the back burner is what I'm kind of saying there. So many people, you know, they make the mistake of, like, how do you say it? Listening to respond, but not listening to understand. And people will admire you if you understand what they're actually saying. And I feel this principle goes hand in hand with being genuinely interested in what someone has to say. So practice being a better listener. I think there are all the principles that I would take from the first two sections. So Gav, what are the most important principles you found in the last two sections of the book?
Yeah, no worries, Sam. So, I mean, looking at those two sections of how to win friends, influence people, what Carnegie does, firstly, he educates us on, he gives us 12 ways to win people to your way of thinking. So I'm going to categorize these 12 ways into three main areas of focus. And I must say, like, this is generally my favorite book ever, because what it is, it's really just a book on how to be a sound person and get along with everyone you meet, regardless of the circumstance. You know, like, it's the ultimate guidebook for life, because it's all about communication. And, you know, we all go through tough situations in life where we end up in conflict and can't seem to reach an agreement. Carnegie's solution to getting out of arguments is to just avoid them altogether, because no one can ever win an argument. And if you go in trying to beat the other person, emotions, they'll only take over, you know? And you leave the conversation even more convinced that you're right and that they're wrong. You need to be way more objective and remain level-headed when you're in a situation where things start to get tense. And what it comes down to really is your ego. You know, the bigger your ego, the less sound you are. I think most Irish people will agree with me on that one. And being sound, being a nice person, it's not about trying to prove other people wrong and not being overly fussed when people see the world differently to you. You know, on top of that, if you do find yourself in a position where, you know, you're after making an error in judgment, like, cop on and have the courage to openly admit your mistakes. Hold your hands up, try to learn. Instead of, you know, trying to justify your decisions that you've clearly gotten wrong, you just look stupid and stubborn. Then, you know, if we're talking about like a proper negotiation, like a sales situation where you know things are going to get intense, Carnegie has some really good guidance to get you through to the other side of the ordeal totally unscathed. And what he says is that you should begin all communications like these in a friendly way. You know, smile, make a joke, break the ice, make the other person feel relaxed, build some rapport early, talk about something completely unrelated to the topic of conversation. And the quicker you get on the same level as them and they see you as someone that they get along with, the easier that negotiation is going to go. Something that I've learned from this book and from further experience in sales is that the more you talk, the worse you are going to do. If you're a salesperson or you're in a negotiation scenario, you want them to do at least like 60% of the talking, like at the very least. The more they talk, the more they feel in control, they feel comfortable, and the more likely they are to come to the conclusion that suits you. And, you know, going back to the whole idea of becoming sounder and improving as a person, Carnegie urges us to try honestly to see things from the other person's point of view and to be sympathetic with the other person's ideas and desires. So imagine the whole world made this honest effort to play the devil's advocate as opposed to just spewing their thoughts unfiltered. The world would be so much better off. You know, if people just took a deep breath before speaking, we do so much better. You know, genuinely, by just putting yourself in the shoes of whoever you're interacting with for a split second, you'll be more likely to get along with them. It's like that old saying of treat others how you would like to be treated. It's very simple. So then, you know, going into the final section of How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie, he gives us his 9 ways to change people or spark a change in people without arousing resentment. So without pissing them off or getting them angry at you. And honestly, I can't stress how important it is for anyone listening to this who hasn't read the book. Go get yourself a copy. It's literally like less than a tenner on the book depository, because no matter how I summarize it, my words aren't going to do it justice. So I'll go through the 9 tools to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. 1, begin with praise and honest appreciation. So AKA, you know, be genuinely nice to people. And when you see your friends doing well, tell them they're doing well and tell them you're proud of them. You know, vocalize it. 2, call attention to people's mistakes, but indirectly. You know, no one is perfect. And even if you've told someone about something they did wrong, you know, if you have a child or a brother or sister and you've given out to them, they might forget. And so the second time they do it, they're not doing it to annoy you. They might have just have forgotten, you know. So instead of going berserk, be extra nice to them a second time around. And don't mention it outright. Mention it as discreetly as possible so that they remember that you had said it to them the first time, but you don't have to say it again. 3, talk about your own mistakes before criticizing the other person. So this will help to disarm people. No one likes criticism, and most people will react defensively. So if you really want to see a difference, bring yourself down a couple of notches first. 4, ask questions instead of giving direct orders. You know, everyone hates a micromanager. Focus on understanding how people think instead of criticizing them for thinking differently to you. 5, let the other person save face. You know, there's no need to point out a mistake unless it's absolutely necessary. And if you do see an error being made, do not make it public. It will not do anyone any favors. It'll only make things sour. 6, praise the slightest improvement and praise every improvement. Be hearty in your approbation and lavish in your praise. I love this one, you know, because it's great for any managers or team leaders, parents out there. Be generous with offering appreciation and don't hold back from celebrating small successes. 7, give the other person a fine reputation to live up to. You know, another genius tactic for management. If you want to see high productivity, praise your team for their numbers and how productive they are. Praise is always the answer. You know, 8 then, use encouragement. Make the fault seem like easy to correct. Always play mistakes down. You know, it reminds me of this deadly story about Tom Watson Jr. And he was the CEO of IBM between, it was like 1956 and 1971. So, you know, a young executive had made some bad decisions, really bad decisions, which ended up costing the company like several million dollars. So, you know, he ended up being summoned to Watson's office, fully expecting to be absolutely roared out of the place, fired, dismissed, contract torn up, P45. But as he entered the office, he said, you know, well, I suppose after that set of mistakes, you're going to want to fire me. But you know what Watson's response was? He said, Not at all, young man. We've just spent a couple of million dollars educating you. I love it. Number 9, make the other person happy about doing the thing that you suggest, a difficult one, and you do need to be creative, you know, and apply it to all tricky situations. You need to remember, like, start with praise and people will walk away from all interactions much, much happier. So that's my summary of the last two sections of the book.
Brill, cheers for that, Gavin. Okay, folks, I think we'll wrap it up there. Obviously, the podcast is all about, you know, sharing ideas, life stories, and advice from the best in the business. And no doubt that Dale Carnegie was an exceptional communicator with principles, you know, transcending decades. So, you know, we highly recommend you check out his book, and we will be bringing you more key takeaway segments in the future. So if you have any books that you'd recommend, shoot them over. We'll have a read and then we'll try and get some key takeaways out for you. So if you enjoyed the episode, be sure to subscribe to the newsletter. If you'd like to be notified of the latest episode when it comes out, you can follow us on social media at the Kickstart Garage. But that's all for now, and, you know, we'll catch you in the next one.
Thanks for listening to the Kickstart Garage. This show is for entertainment purposes only.
This show is for entertainment purposes only. No one on the show has provided investment advice. The information provided by the Kickstart Garage podcast should not be construed as investment advice. The opinions and views expressed on the Kickstart Garage podcast or those of the participants do not reflect those of the host or sponsors. The Kickstart Garage, its producers, sponsors, hosts, and guests shall not be liable for losses resulting from the investment decisions based upon the opinions or viewpoints presented on the Kickstart Garage.